First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Florida physicians rally against the governor's pick for Surgeon General. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this hour, the growing opposition to Dr. Joseph Latipo as the state's top doc, 549-2937. Then later, opponents of a spaceport up in Georgia say they're not giving up their fight. That and more ahead this morning. But first today, doctors around the state are speaking out this week. There is a state Senate health committee today. They're holding their first hearing on confirming Dr. Joseph Latipo as Florida's Surgeon General. But a coalition of physicians across the Sunshine State say Latipo is unqualified to hold the post based on numerous controversies around his handling of COVID-19. Now, at the same time this is going on, Florida is reacting as a result of the federal government's decision around monoclonal antibody treatment. The FDA has revised its authorization for the use of Regeneron to treat COVID-19. That means Regeneron clinics in our area, antibody treatment sites, are closing. We'll talk about all of this as we welcome Dr. Nancy Stotz of the group Doctors Fighting COVID. Dr. Stotz, good morning.
Good morning.
And also on the line, Dr. Fred Southwick, infectious disease physician at UF Health. Dr. Southwick, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And as we talk about doctors rallying against the governor's nominee to be Surgeon General of Florida and also the closing of these Regeneron clinics, we want your calls. It's 549-2937. 549-2937. Give us a call. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInjax. Already getting them. Dr. Stotz, let's begin with you. You're a part of a coalition around the state called Doctors Fighting COVID. Will there be doctors in Tallahassee today making their voices heard against Dr. Latipo's confirmation, and why?
Yes, there will. I know several who are going, although between Omicron and the crush of patients that we're still dealing with, it's been made a bit more difficult. But the bottom line is physicians have grave concerns about Dr. Latipo, and I just want your listeners to understand this is for reasons of a very fringe beliefs and practices. So, for example, not being vaccinated, we assume, although you can't find evidence one way or the other, and poor judgment. So the credentialing, everything from the beginning to now has really raised more questions than answers, and has had multiple evidence of poor judgment.
Right. Dr. Southwick, here are some of the concerns physicians like you are raising. Dr. Latipo was an early member of a group called America's Frontline Doctors. They're an anti-vaccine group. They promoted false treatments for their own profits. He's also a supporter of the Great Barrington Declaration. That is a widely debunked theory advocating for natural herd immunity to COVID, which would have killed a lot more people. Dr. Latipo was even seen in a video that said demon sperm is the cause of COVID-19. And so what about the fact that he is set to be the state's top physician?
Yes, I'm as an infectious disease specialist, and by the way, these are my personal opinions that may not reflect the University of Florida. This is a very, very important position at this juncture in the pandemic. And what is required is someone who follows the true science. And one of the, as an editor of the Journal of Infectious Disease, I can tell you there are a lot of people that send in papers that draw false conclusions and misinterpret data. And unfortunately, Dr. Latipo has done that over and over again. He has misinterpreted data. For instance, the Great Barrington Declaration, as you mentioned, actually says that we should allow everyone to become infected to achieve herd immunity through infection. And I actually calculated out what that would mean for the United States. That would mean 4 million deaths and over 265, actually, would outstrip our health system by approximately 5 to 10-fold. So this would be a terrible mistake, and no card-carrying epidemiologist or infectious disease expert would ever support that approach.
Okay. Now, as this is going on, at the same time, the DeSantis administration is reacting with anger after the federal government Monday revised its guidelines around the use of antibody treatments like Regeneron to treat COVID-19. These Regeneron treatments don't work well against the Omicron variant of the virus. What that means is the clinics in Jacksonville are shutting down. Now, we spoke about this yesterday with Atlantic Beach attorney James Urbach. He reached out to us. Urbach is vaccinated and boosted. He's still got a moderate breakthrough case of COVID, as some people are. He says he's frustrated that the state was pushing monoclonal antibody treatment that's not effective. Here's that conversation. Let's listen quickly.
After doing the research around town, it's great that Florida has additional sites that have opened for monoclonal antibody treatment. Unfortunately, in what seems to be political theater, the antibodies that are available here are the remdesivir protocol, which the NIH and others have pointed out seems to be pretty much ineffective against the Omicron variant. So while we have product available, it's nothing that does any good against the overwhelming majority of the corona issues that are out there now.
So how frustrated are you then by the state's response, particularly as the governor's state surgeon general is about to be confirmed and he's been leading the pandemic response?
I'll be honest, I'm very frustrated by what seems to be a lot of political theater. You know, I view politics sometimes as the art of taking money from everybody to award your supporters with. And knowing that our governor wishes to play on a larger national stage, so much of this seems to be about positioning himself for the national audience that he wants to appeal to.
Dr. Nancy Stutz, Doctors Fighting COVID, we taped that yesterday when the Regeneron clinics were still operating. Today we find out they'll be closing because the federal government has said, look, this treatment isn't effective against the Omicron variant. So between that and Dr. Latipo's controversies, how concerned are you overall about the way this state is approaching the pandemic as we head into year three?
Yeah, it's a good point, Melissa. I'm very concerned. And there's a couple levels of concern. The first is the most obvious is an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I don't know how many times we have to show that the vaccine so far has been very effective in preventing serious disease and hospitalization. And so 80% roughly of hospitalized patients are unvaccinated. Another close to 15 to 20% are only double vaxxed but not boosted. And then there's a small remaining number who have had all three shots and still hospitalized. But this is hurting our system. We've lost 20%, close to 20% of our healthcare workers, and can you blame them, really? And meanwhile, they're running ads about, oh, the way to avoid bad COVID is to be healthy, lose weight, exercise. I mean, I'm all for losing weight and exercise, but we don't need a Surgeon General to tell us that. We need a person we can turn to when things get bad and things get ugly. And I just don't have a sense that we have vetted this person properly, and we need to ask our senators in the Florida Senate Health Committee, you need more information on this guy before we put him in this very, very important position.
549-2937. Give us a call. Winona in Jacksonville. Winona, good morning.
Yes, good morning. My daughter got Guillain-Barré when she was younger, which means she can't take the shot. Now, she did get COVID.
I'm sorry, what happened to her?
She had Guillain-Barré syndrome.
Oh, okay.
When she was younger.
Yeah.
Which means she can't take the shot. She did get COVID, and she got on the treatment, Regeneron treatment, and she got okay. So now, if they do away with this Regeneron, what can people like she do?
Thanks for that question, Winona. Dr. Southwick, UF Health, let's be clear, the Regeneron monoclonal antibody treatments did help thousands of Floridians, although with the variant now mutating once again, they're no longer seen as effective. But what about her question and patients like that and the options that they will be seeking? There are some new antivirals coming online. Can you talk about that?
Yes, there's a really, first of all, remember the Omicron has over 50 mutations, and a number of those mutations are in the N-terminal end of the spike protein where the antibodies recognize the spike protein and actually block it from being able to bind to cells. So the reason that Regeneron doesn't work is those sites have changed and the antibody doesn't bind to the spike protein of Omicron. So it really basically now that is of no use whatsoever. And it's quite frankly, it's embarrassing that they're continuing to push a drug that doesn't work. And it's very similar to his past history of pushing hydroxychloroquine, even though there were multiple studies, controlled trials that showed that it was of no benefit. So his history is very clear that he comes to a conclusion. We call it anchoring, and then he sticks with it no matter what the data is. So as far as what the alternatives are, the best alternative will be the new Pfizer antiviral drug. It's pills. I think you take 3 pills twice a day for 5 days, and it has reduced hospitalizations by 88% to 89% to 90%. So it's a very effective drug, and it
Say the name of
the
it again. Could you say the name of it again?
It's the Pfizer. It starts
it's
with
very
a
very long name.
Yeah.
I don't have it. It's the only drug that Pfizer released in pill form, antiviral drug.
All righty. Well, that's good news.
Yes, it is. And my understanding is they're starting in the state of Florida to distribute that drug. The problem is it's very complicated to manufacture and takes time, and therefore we have a limited supply. But I would think individuals that truly were not eligible for the vaccine, they would be the top candidates for this treatment.
If you're just tuning in, this is First Coast Connect. I'm Melissa Ross. We're speaking with Dr. Nancy Stotz of Doctors Fighting COVID and Dr. Fred Southwick, infectious disease specialist at UF Health. Two big things happening today. One, the governor's controversial pick to be Florida's Surgeon General has a confirmation hearing today in Tallahassee. Physicians are rallying at the state capitol against the confirmation of Dr. Joseph Latipo, saying he's unqualified, has fringe views, and is even dangerous. At the same time, the federal government has shut down Regeneron treatment in Florida, monoclonal antibody treatment for COVID-19, because the data shows this kind of treatment is not effective against the Omicron variant of the virus. Two big stories today, 549-2937. Give us a call. Lots of tweets. Here's just one. It's a colossal error in judgment to nominate Latipo. Not only does he have no experience in public health or epidemiology, he's against COVID prevention and instead pushes Regeneron, which doesn't work against Omicron and is way more expensive. Well, that is no longer an option, by the way. Here's a tweet from Joey. He's not there to be Surgeon General. He's there to draw attention and book Fox News appearances to further DeSantis' run for president on the public's dime. None of this has ever been about doing his job or the health and well-being of Floridians. Dr. Nancy Stotz, Doctors Fighting COVID. Let's be clear. The Senate panel, the Florida Senate and the Florida House are marching pretty much in lockstep with the governor these days. Dr. Latipo is likely to be confirmed, officially confirmed. So what about the perception among voters out there that all of this is political and that it's not about public health?
Well, of course, politics, exists, and we have to work with that. But I do want to emphasize to all your listeners, and you know, I'm married to someone who votes Republican and is vaccinated, and I think the idea that Governor DeSantis has nominated this person is way beyond politics, in my view. This is now entering into really a dangerous area because Dr. Latipa would be in charge of the entire Department of Health, where, as you know, recently someone who was in charge, I believe in Orange County or near Tampa, was put on administrative leave for encouraging his employees to get vaccinated, which is the responsible thing to do. And so it goes beyond pure politics. This is truly the health and safety of the citizens of Florida. And if you call yourself a public servant and you're going to just rubber stamp this man in, I'm not sure that's the proper name for you.
549-2937, Judy in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Judy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have some serious concerns about Dr. Lepido, particularly in light of the 16,000 Floridians who have unnecessarily died as a result of vaccine refusal. And these are the kinds of policies that are very anti-science that our present administration is promoting, as well as having a rubber stamp from an ill-qualified physician who will then, you know, appear to be the voice of science. It's putting Floridians at risk. So I would like to know what we can do, the public, to oppose this confirmation and disappointment, because it really will put our residents at severe risk. I also wanted to provide information that medication by Pfizer is called Paxlovid. That's the
oral, thanks for that, Judy.
Yeah, Paxlovid.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll take my answers off.
Thank you. Dr. Southwick, how can voters make their voices heard on this matter?
Yes, I also looked it up, and she's right, it's Paxlovid. It's an unusual name, and unfortunately, we haven't had access to it yet, so I have not been able to prescribe it. I think that all citizens who are concerned need to gather and protest, and there are a number of ways. I think writing letters to each of your senators, state senators, and House representatives is one very effective way, and also calling them. And I think if there are enough calls and enough contacts with the House representatives today, and that's one of the reasons we're on this show, is to encourage you to speak out. I mean, we are supposedly a democracy, although people are trying hard to eliminate us as a democracy, but we have our voices need to be heard.
Let me ask you about that as a follow-up. The Florida legislature, on a slew of issues, ignores the will of the voters routinely. You name the issue, they are not doing what the majority of Florida voters want. And they have insulated themselves due to gerrymandered districts from any real accountability.
Yep.
Dr. Stott.
I couldn't agree more, Melissa. And it's really a question of when are we going to stand up and say enough is enough, whether it's, you know, women's reproductive health, you name the issue that is clearly a minority of people who want these agenda items, and yet they seem to be pushed through with very little resistance.
Well,
and voting rights.
Voting rights is another big example.
Saying basically, I cannot mail in ballot without a tremendous amount of red tape. So I'm going to have to go to the polling place this year, and I will not be able to send in a mail-in ballot, even though COVID continues. It's very frustrating, and it's really anti-democratic.
549-2937. Philip on the West Side. Hi, Philip.
Hello. My comment is, in the past, the Dr. Jalapo, which I call J-Law, happened to make the statement that he does not wear a mask because he cannot communicate well. But if he is a doctor in an operating situation with nurses, they always wear masks and communicate very well.
That's right. Philip, thanks for that. Dr. Latipo ran afoul of someone in the Senate, Dr. Stott's Boca Raton, Senator Tina Polsky. In October, asked Dr. Latipo to leave her office because he wouldn't put on a mask. She was a breast cancer patient and asked him to mask up as she's immunocompromised. He refused to do so. The president of the Florida Senate condemned Dr. Latipo for this. The governor continues to defend Dr. Latipo. As far as we know, Dr. Latipo is also not vaccinated. And so these are the kinds of things that have led to today's rally. Nancy Statz.
Yes, well, as I said, the judgment and genuine care and concern for others, that would seem to me, along with your experience, to be critical requirements for this position. I am assuming Dr. Latipo has been on an airplane in the last 2 years, so we know he's able to put a mask on, for example, then. And as your caller very correctly pointed out, in the operating room every day, doctors, nurses, and anesthesiologists communicate perfectly well with masks on. So it's absolutely disingenuous at best and honestly uncaring. And so it's of great concern.
Joe at the beaches. Hi, Joe.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I'm an ER nurse, and to have a Surgeon General for Florida be anti-vax. Now, I'm just going off what you guys are saying. I haven't researched the Latipo or anything like that. After what we went through this summer with over 80% of the people in our ER and getting admitted to the ICU as being non-vaxxed, I just think DeSantis has been, it's just a breach of his duty to protect the state of Florida. I just can't believe they'd put somebody like that in charge.
Thanks for that, Joe. You know, overwhelmingly, we hear from doctors and nurses. Dr. Southwick, when we talk about the way the state is handling this pandemic, and typically they're horrified and they're angry because they're seeing what's going on and what continues to go on in our ERs.
Yeah, there's a real problem with burnout. I mean, when we keep making the same mistakes over and over, and then the person in charge saying we're successful, we are not being successful. All the hospitals right now are inundated with COVID-19 patients, and this number of cases did not need to be this high. Certainly, we would have had some breakthrough, but nothing like we have now. As Dr. Statz mentioned, somewhere around 80% of those that are hospitalized even now are those that were not vaccinated. So this is a terrible tragedy that we're not promoting the clear and right actions, and the consequence is more cases. The consequence is, and this is what was a concern about the Grain-Barrington Declaration, we would overwhelm our health system, and that's what we are doing. And it's a slow death of the health system because more and more nurses and frontline caregivers I just can't take the pressure any longer of having to overwork day in and day out. And this has been going on now for 2 years. Usually individuals learn from their mistakes. The problem is that is not occurring in the state of Florida. They are not learning from their mistakes. In fact, they're trying to hide their mistakes and push them under the rug as though they're being successful. They are not successful. Another big concern to me is the claim that when you use masks, when you get vaccinated, somehow that's bad for business and that you shouldn't mandate vaccines within your workplace. Now, if you want to go back to work, don't you want everybody else to be protected and everybody else to have maximally reducing the risk of infection so you don't get infected? Freedom, this false notion of freedom, is extremely dangerous. What DeSantis is saying and Latipo are saying is you have the freedom to infect others. And we know when no one is concerned about his fellow man, when no one is concerned about the community, that is when pandemics rage, and that's when infections cannot be like.
No, sorry. Oh, sorry to cut you off. Leo in Jacksonville. Leo, go ahead. Hi, Leo, you're on the air. Okay, we're having trouble getting him, but he's an ER doctor, he said, and he wanted to say that he did not feel Dr. Latipo was fit to serve. Dr. Nancy Statz, you know, This hearing is happening today. There are doctors in Tallahassee rallying against Dr. Latipo's confirmation. But that said, he's likely to be approved. As I mentioned a moment ago, the legislature is insulated from its voters. The state's districts are gerrymandered. We even reported in recent weeks about the way Florida Power and Light used dark money to put up phony candidates for the Florida Senate, fake candidates, so that the Senate would remain in Republican hands. There are a number of shenanigans that go on like that here in Florida to engineer elections, put the thumb on the scale to prevent the will of the voters from being fairly expressed. And so, you know, here is a message from a listener. Is there any way we can actually stop this nomination from going through? I feel like it's hopeless. I think people feel that way when it comes to a lot of issues in Florida, although, of course, there are millions of Floridians who like the way the state is dealing with COVID and other issues. Dr. Nancy Stotz, your final thoughts.
Well, my final thoughts is that, you know, as a physician, it's a privilege and an honor to care for people. And when you show up at the hospital, you should be assured that everyone caring for you is at least vaccinated, so you're not worse off than when you're coming in your very vulnerable state. We don't even know that this person is vaccinated. We think not. He hasn't done any work at UF yet. We think maybe because he won't get vaccinated, and that's part of their policy is to be vaccinated. So it just, it feels to me as if that literal health, the literal life of your constituents, dear senators, should matter enough, that this should be a red line you cannot cross, and okay, go ahead and promote your Regeneron if you need to, but you cannot have a person in charge who is not capable of making good judgment calls. That's my final thought.
Dr. Southwick.
Yes, he really doesn't have the training. He is the and the reason that DeSantis likes him is he is very well spoken, and he sells snake oil as though it's the truth. And unfortunately, I don't know what is driving him. As a physician, we are taught to do no harm. Well, I'm sorry, Dr. Latipo is doing harm by actually questioning the vaccine and by questioning the appropriate therapies and preventative care that we should all be following.
Thank you both for being with us, Dr. Nancy Stotz of Doctors Fighting COVID, Dr. Southwick of UF Health, infectious disease specialist, and we'll follow the action out of Tallahassee today. Thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Later in the hour, why opponents of a spaceport in Camden County, Georgia, say they're not giving up their fight. That's coming up later, but up next.
As a conservation photographer, I want my images to be an inspiration for furthering the protection of land.
Photographer and naturalist Carlton Ward Jr. on Florida's precious wildlife corridor. We'll be right back.
The Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT Public Media is your ticket to the local scene. Music reviews, curated playlists, music history, concert recommendations, profiles of local artists, and more. Turn your ear on the beautiful noise emerging from Northeast Florida and learn more about the local artist whose music is reverberating across the country. Visit jacksmusic.org to play it local and play it loud.
How sleep or lack thereof can impact your well-being. I'm Dr. Joe Servin, Join me Saturday at 4 for What's Health Got to Do with It? Only at WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. The Late Bloomers Garden Club of Jacksonville recently announced that Carlton Ward Jr. is being awarded an honorary membership by the Garden Club of America. The announcement coincides with the airing of a new documentary on PBS stations called Saving the Florida Wildlife Corridor. Now, Carlton is eminently qualified as a conservation photographer and filmmaker, but his activism in leading the fight to save the wildlife corridor and the Florida panther clinched his membership. I spoke with Carlton Ward Jr. about his work and Florida wildlife. Here's that conversation.
Carlton Ward, good to be with you, and congratulations with the honor from the Garden Club of America. It's nice recognition.
Thank you, Melissa. Yes, pretty exciting to have this honor and to be in some pretty prestigious company with the other people who have received it.
Yeah, and one of the few Floridians to receive this award. Now, certainly your work is worthy of this kind of accolade. Can you talk a little bit about how you bring your talents to bear, in particular when it comes to how your images played a pivotal role, really, in bringing back from the brink a nearly extinct species in the eastern United States?
Well, I, as a conservation photographer, I want my images to be an inspiration for furthering the protection of land or places. And in the case of the Florida panther, my work is shining a light on the really good work of other people, landowners, conservationists, researchers who have been doing the hard work year after year to bring this species back. My focus and our team's focus to the Path of the Panther project has been to use that story of the Florida panther as an emblem to try to inspire further protection of the land the panther needs to survive, and that is namely the Florida Wildlife Corridor. And so through the story of the Florida panther, combined with working with partners and outreach, we are able to help inspire lawmakers in Tallahassee to increase investment in land conservation this past year.
That's right. With the the unanimous approval in the legislature for the Florida Wildlife Corridor, talk a little bit about how crucial that is for preserving Florida's environment and wildlife.
It's absolutely vital that we as Floridians continue to invest in land conservation, and the unanimous and bipartisan passage of the Florida Wildlife Corridor Act is clear evidence that lawmakers across the political spectrum believe in the future of conservation in Florida. You know, the Florida Wildlife Corridor provides a framework and a shared common ground to help protect that future for wildlife and people. It's particularly exciting that some new investment came to help realize those opportunities to invest in the conservation easement and the preservation of additional public lands that will help fill in the gaps and preserve a connected network throughout Florida.
Well, Camden County is moving forward with the purchase of 4,000 acres to develop a spaceport in South Georgia. This after a judge dismissed attempts from local residents to block that sale. But some in St. Mary's area say they're not giving up their fight. Steve Weinkel is one of them. He's been part of a vocal opposition effort to the spaceport in Camden County, Georgia, and he joins us now. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Melissa. How are you this morning?
I'm great, thanks. Good to be with you. So you did suffer a setback in court. A judge ruled against your effort to get an injunction against the county buying thousands of acres to develop a spaceport. Where do you take this fight next?
We go to the Georgia Court of Appeals in Atlanta. We think that the Superior Court judge here gave us plenty of grounds for appeal, primarily that he said that we started too late. Well, that just isn't supported by law or by the events as they've occurred.
And
so we believe that if we move forward through the Court of Appeals, we ultimately will get a decision that's favorable.
You and many others in Camden County have been appealing against this mainly for environmental reasons. If there is a launch pad for vertical takeoff in Camden County, rockets would be going over the federally protected Cumberland Island National Seashore. So that's the main concern, isn't it, that people have in opposing the spaceport? Is that right?
Yes, that is a primary. I would say we have two main concerns, if there can be two main. One of them, of course, is the environmental risk to Cumberland Island National Seashore and also to Georgia's intercoastal tidewaters, which lay in between the spaceport and Cumberland Island. So unlike Kennedy Space Center or Wallops Launch Center, also on the East Coast up in Virginia, Camden County has to launch over lots of intercoastal tidewater, miles of it, before it goes over a national seashore, before it reaches the beach and can approach the ocean. The other problem that we're faced with is that Camden County is a small county. We have 55,000 people approximately. We have a very important anchor business, that is the Kings Bay Naval Submarine Base, which is the home fleet base for the Atlantic ballistic and attack submarines that are our anchor, really, of our nuclear defense. And so that's our home base here, and that produces about 9,000 jobs, which is about the same as Kennedy Space Center produces. And so that's already here, and that is that has a long future anticipated. What we have as a problem, though, is that we don't have a lot of fiscal resources to waste on a spaceport that the FAA has said does not have a rocket available for it in the foreseeable future.
So what
FAA
would it, what
has
would
the longest foresight possible.
What would let me be clear. Camden County, Georgia has spent over $10 million to create Spaceport Camden in South Georgia. Supporters of the idea say it will bring a lot of jobs to the region. At the same time, as you said, the National Park Service has raised concerns with the FAA about rockets taking off over federally protected places. And so if there's no rocket available, how will the space be used in the short term?
Well, we don't have any idea what their real plans are. They have said for a long time that it's really not about launching rockets, that they just want all that ancillary business. But with all of the advertising and publicity that Spaceport Camden has gotten, both in local and in national press, there's not been a single business that has actually moved a single desk into Camden County. And so those ancillary businesses don't necessarily locate near spaceports anyway. You've noticed, I'm sure, that your Cecil Spaceport in Jacksonville does not have space-oriented businesses as anchor tenants. The nearest user that has that's spending any money whatsoever in the space business is actually located in Atlanta, and those jobs are in Atlanta, not at Cecil. And so that's typical of spaceports. The people who build satellites, they don't need to be near a spaceport. The folks that are building satellites near Kennedy, OneWeb, which is a major manufacturer of network development, internet net, development satellites that are building two satellites a day near Kennedy Space Center. They're actually launching those on Russian rockets from Russia or from Brazil. They don't use Kennedy Space Center, even though they're located near Kennedy Space Center. So there's no correlation between jobs and spaceports, except where NASA is footing the bill or the Air Force is footing the bill.
Now let me ask you, Steve, Camden County is going to go ahead now and purchase thousands of acres to try to develop this spaceport. But it's not over until the fat lady sings. Licenses to use the launch pad for vertical takeoff still need to be granted by the FAA before this is a completely done deal. That's basically an opaque process. You wouldn't necessarily have a window into that. So is it your hope then to try to defeat this proposal through the courts or to continue to try to lobby the FAA in some way? And do we have an inkling as to how likely it is that the FAA will grant the license for the launch pad there?
Well, first of all, there is also an alternative. We can defeat it at the ballot box by electing officials who will keep from wasting our precious tax dollars. And so that is going to happen in as early as May, when we have the chance to turn out two of the commissioners who have voted consistently to waste money on Spaceport Camden. If we own the property, we won't be able to reverse that. We will own that in perpetuity, just like Union Carbide has owned it because it is contaminated. And the only people who might have been able to buy it are folks that have limitless access to tax funds or to government funds, like through grants. And since we'll be stuck with that, that is really kind of like the albatross around our neck for all future economic development opportunity. What we're trying to do is protect our options for the future by not owning a piece of property that's now owned by a company that's about 100 times as valuable, economically valuable, as every piece of property and every building put together in Camden County. And so Union Carbide, which is part of Dow, is now responsible for the contamination and the risk. That's the environmental thing that we're most concerned about.
Steve Weinkel, you've been, I hate to cut you off, but we'll have to check back with you. You've been vocal on this issue for years now. We do continue to follow it across the state line. Spaceport Camden did clear another hurdle in the courts, despite, as we've heard, strong opposition from many residents there. Steve Weinkel, we'll check in with you another day soon. Thanks so much.
That's fine. Thank you very much, Melissa.
And up next, the stars of the Broadway smash, Dear Evan Hansen, drop by as the show comes to town this week, right after this.
COVID response, academic freedom issues, workforce shortages, and a looming election. These are just a few of the matters facing Florida lawmakers this year. You'll get the latest on these and whatever else they consider throughout the 2022 Florida lawmaking session on Capitol Report.
Tonight at 6:30 on WGCT News 89.9.
I'm Marco Werman. Next time on The World, Brazil fought one of the globe's deadliest outbreaks of COVID last year. Now Omicron is setting infection records again, and indigenous Brazilians have been hit especially hard. How Omicron is impacting Brazil's native people. That story and the latest from Ukraine, it's on The World.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, a journey through the South to understand the soul of a nation. Imani Perry, a native of Birmingham who now teaches African American studies at Princeton, visits cities, small towns, and historic sites below the Mason-Dixon line, reflecting on the region's history and tracing the steps of an enslaved ancestor. Her new book is South to America. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Fewer Americans were hitting the multiplex even before the pandemic. Now, most audiences just want to stay home. Ticket sales in 2021 outpaced 2020, but even those were still 70% behind the hall from 2019. What does that mean for what movies get made? We ask the experts next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. It's the acclaimed Broadway show that won 6 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, and the 2018 Grammy Award for Best Musical Theater Album. A letter that was never meant to be seen, a lie that was never meant to be told, a life he never dreamed he could have. Dear Evan Hansen is the deeply personal and contemporary musical about life and the way we live it. The show takes the stage tonight at the Times Union Center for the Performing Arts. For more about the show, I spoke with two of the actresses in the production, Claire Rankin and Jessica Sherman.
Ladies, thanks for joining us. Claire, let's start with you. Evan Hansen is so beloved, and we're excited it's coming to town. For those who aren't familiar, though, tell us about the show.
Dear Evan Hansen is a musical that is a play about a teenage boy and his mom, and their relationship and the trials and tribulations that they go through. It's also about a boy who inadvertently tells a lie to a family, which sets off a chain of events, some good, some bad. But it also tells us what happens when we make decisions in the desperation to try to connect with people, and how those things can bring us closer together, and how inadvertently we can cause damage along the way.
Right. And without giving away too much of what happens in the show, Jessica, how do you think the themes of Dear Evan Hansen are really resonating, particularly right now as we're struggling to come out of this pandemic?
Oh, I think, I actually think it gets more and more relevant every time we do it. because it's so much about finding, I want to say the balance actually between the real world connection and the connection that we, you know, especially now, it's very much a part of our lives, is the connection through social media, through computers, through whatever, through Zoom as we are on right now. And sort of trying to come to an understanding of what's real and all that, what isn't. How do you be yourself and be true to yourself and be vulnerable, you know, if all you have is connections to people through technology? I think that's a very relevant question for all of us right now. And also in the longing for the personal interaction and the one-on-one relationship.
Sure.
Desperately.
Sure. There are serious themes that go with this production, but it's still a fun show to watch with great music. Claire, talk
sure
about
is
that if you could.
I think what's interesting is that we do tackle some very important subject matter, but it's done with an enormous amount of humor. The great thing about the show is that there are characters who are living in a more dramatic world, and there are characters who get to live with a little more joy and humor. And so there's a balance to the intensity of the material that's being discussed, with a lot of incredibly fun music, really catchy songs, and a lot of laughs to kind of balance that. And I think that there's something about being able to laugh through this kind of heavier subject matter that makes it that much more accessible.
Thank you both, ladies, and have a great show. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we'll close with a song from Dear Evan Hansen. This is Waving Through a Window. Enjoy. See you tomorrow.
Before I even turn the key, before I make the mistake, before I lead with the worst of me, give them no reason to stare. No slipping up if you slip away. So I got nothing to share. No, I got nothing to say. Step out of the sun if you keep getting burned. Step out of the sun because you've learned, because you've learned. On the outside, always looking in, will I ever be more than I've always been? Cause I'm tap, tap, tapping on the glass. I'm waving through a window. I try to speak, but nobody can hear. So I wait around for an answer to appear while I'm watching people pass. I'm waving through a window. Can anybody see? Is anybody waving back at me? In our eyes, we start believing that we belong, but every sun doesn't rise, and no one tells you where you went wrong. Step out of the sun if you keep getting burned. Step out of the sun because you've learned, because you've learned. On the outside, always looking in, will I? Nobody around. Do you ever really crash or even make a sound? When you're falling in a forest and there's nobody around, do you ever really crash or even make a sound? When you're falling in a forest and there's nobody around, do you ever really crash or even make a sound? When you're falling in a forest and there's nobody around, do you ever...
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.